says, it says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space returned upon rest.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Stopping by and listening to street musicians usually changes our mood for the rest of the day. The experience would be different if one lies under the instrument while it is being played. And that's exactly what a pianist in America has done. Colin Huggins, a busker, wheels his grand piano more than a half a mile from a mini storage to New York's Washington Square Park. He lets people lie down under the instrument and feel the vibrations from the claviers in their bodies. Colin says he wants to help people recover emotionally from the intense disconnect they had faced during COVID lockdowns.
I've always wanted to accommodate feelings in the best way possible, and I wanted to do it with music, and this is the best way I figure out how to do it. Maybe someday I'll figure out a way to do it even better, and I won't need to push this piano here. But as of now, this is the best I've got.
New York was one of the hardest hit cities by COVID in the U.S. Like other places, the major city imposed lockdowns and tough curbs to contain the virus. Despite that, Colin continued playing on the streets, frequently to an audience of zero. He says he strongly believes that everything will be okay. Cambodian fishermen aiming for small fish were shocked to see the surprise catch tied to their hook. This creature was nothing but an endangered giant freshwater stingray, which had swallowed the fishermen's catch. It was 4 meters long and weighed 180 kilos. The female leviathan is one of the rarest species of fish in Southeast Asia. Therefore, a team of international experts helped unhook the stingray to release it back to the waters unharmed.
All right, so we've just released our giant stingray back into the wild. She's kind of hanging out on the surface of the river here. It's amazing to be able to see her swimming around in her natural habitat and to have participated in the release of this giant stingray today.
The giant stingray was caught in the Mekong River, an important habitat for different species of fish, including huge catfish and barb. However, experts say the river's underwater ecosystem has been damaged by massive plastic wastes. Environmentalists constantly warn that building dams on the Mekong River is also destroying its large fish stock.
Scaling Mount Everest is only a dream for many and a once-in-a-lifetime achievement for most professional mountaineers. Well, not for this Nepali Sherpa, who has now repeated the feat for a record 26th time. 52-year-old Kami Rita led a group of other Sherpa climbers along the traditional Southeast Ridge route to the world's tallest peak. In the process, he beat his own previous record set last year. Rita first scaled Everest in 1994 and has been making the trip nearly every year since then. The Sherpa community is an ethnic group indigenous to the Himalayan region. They are expert mountain navigators who also carry heavy loads. Everest stands nearly 9,000 meters above sea level. The mountain has been climbed more than 10,000 times since it was first scaled in 1953. The bad news is more than 300 people have died trying. Chinese scientists are establishing a meteorological monitoring station at an altitude of 8,800 meters on Mount Komolangma, the world's highest peak on the China-Nepal border. The 13 members of the research team started the trek towards an 8,300-meter base camp on Mount Kolalangma from a 7,028-meter camp on Tuesday morning. They reached the camp in the afternoon and went on the last section of the arduous journey up on Wednesday morning. It replaces the one at an altitude of 8,430 meters set up by the British and U.S. scientists on the mountains in 2019. While some drivers are obsessed with the speed, some others have a passion for the look of their cars. In Tehran, car tuning lovers have assembled for the biggest show of modified vehicles. Yusuf Jalali has the story.
Fast and furious. It's the biggest show of personal cars turned SUVs. Held in Tehran's Island Karting Track, the event brought together more than 500 motorists to flaunt their modified cars.
This is the only place where car tuning lovers can vent their energy and show off their beautiful cars. When I saw the call for such a big assembly of modified vehicles, I didn't waste a moment and decided to bring my car here.
Exhausts sound deeper, with flames popping out. Sound systems rattle the car roofs. And regular doors are replaced by butterfly doors, opening upward. To these people, car tuning is more than a hobby, but a passion. Majid says he has spent double the price of this Peugeot 206 to turn it into a green beast.
For us, our cars mean everything. To me, it's love. I save whatever I earn to spend on my car. So I urge the police to respect this love and stop fining us when we roll with our cars on the streets.
Based on Iran's traffic regulations, drivers are not allowed to alter the original design of their cars. Installing loudspeakers and noisy exhaust systems, and even attaching stickers, are associated with fines. Omid says he can't take this. He has transformed his Iranian-made car, dubbed Rana, into a whole new model, saying it looks better now on the street.
I spent whatever I could afford to make the streets look better with our cars, but the police are treating us like we are wrongdoers. I myself oppose dangerous driving in the city. What I want is just to make my car look more attractive.
Car tuning encompasses any modification to a vehicle that would lead to a higher engine performance and dynamic handling of the car. As long as these people stick to these rules, police will not have issues. Otherwise, they must keep these beauties inside their parking lots.
Thank you. However eye-catching they are, these mutated cars are no longer road pets and are good for drifting on tracks like this. Organizers say that's exactly why they held this show, to provide a chance for car tuning maniacs to vent their energy in a safe place. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The third long-duration team of astronauts launched by SpaceX to the International Space Station, ISS, for NASA safely departed the orbiting outpost to begin their descent back to Earth, capping a six-month science mission. Live video showing the capsule drifting away from the station as the two vehicles soared high over Australia was shown on a NASA webcast. Wearing helmeted white and black spacesuits, the four astronauts were seen strapped into the crew cabin shortly before the spacecraft separated from the station, orbiting some 400 kilometers above the Earth. NASA said one of the cosmonauts, Oleg Artemyev, assumed command of the ISS from Marshburn in a handover before Thursday's undocking.
and I relinquish control of the or command of the space station to you.
I accept command. I accept command. Thank you for key. Thank you for friendship. It was unbelievable time together.
If all goes smoothly, the Crew Dragon craft dubbed Endurance will parachute into the sea off the coast of Florida on Friday. Their departure came about a week after they welcomed their replacement team aboard the station, also currently home to three Russian cosmonauts on a long-term mission. Iran's capital, Tehran, is hosting the country's most high-profile robotics event, dubbed RoboCop Iran Open. The event seeks to promote robotics and artificial intelligence by holding tournaments. Yusuf Shalali has the story.
They may not be able to face human soccer players just yet, but these robot footballers are taking their baby steps toward achieving this goal. The 16th edition of RoboCop Iran Open brought together 100 teams from across the country to compete in different fields of robotics and artificial intelligence, with a focus on soccer robots.
Our robot is a soccer player that moves with its wheels. It's totally different from humanoid robots, but it can certainly challenge them and beat them in a football match.
We have taken part in the Maze League of the RoboCop games. It's the first time I'm involved in this big competition, where I have to implement all my programming, mechanics and electronics skills to win the game. I am so excited.
Organizers say RoboCop seeks to promote robotics and artificial intelligence by offering IT experts a real-time challenge to build the most capable robots.
The idea of RoboCop competitions is to increase the creativity of IT experts in developing efficient robots. Why soccer? Because first of all, it is a highly popular sport, and second, it is a highly strategic game that requires a robot to perform many difficult tasks, which, if accomplished, can turn them into strong and capable robots.
RoboCop Iran Open is part of the international initiative dubbed Robot Soccer World Cup, or shortly, RoboCop. The event was first launched in 1997 and was inspired by the victory of a computer chess player against the then world chess champion, Garry Kasparov. The official goal of the competition, as stated by its organizers, is to hone the capabilities of humanoid robot soccer players so that they will win a soccer game against the winner of the most recent FIFA World Cup in mid-21st century.
While robots still have a long way to go before they can challenge the likes of Messi and Ronaldo, the ultimate goal of RoboCop is not about robot footballers beating human rivals, but the technology advances that can be made along the way to improve our lives. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us. Oh.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Dear listeners, hello everyone. Welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and in this edition, we will try to have a closer look at the 25th chapter, Surah Al-Furqan. First, let's just listen to the verses we're going to talk about in this program, and we'll be back shortly. So stay with us.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وتوكل على الحي الذي لا يموت وسبح بحمده وكفى به بذنوب عباده خبيرا
And rely upon the ever-living who does not die and exalt Allah with his praise and sufficient is he to be with the sins of his servants acquainted.
Brothers and sisters, we were discussing the 58th verse of the chapter. وَتَوَكَّلْ عَلَى الْحَيِّ الَّذِي لَا يَمُوتُ وَسَبِّحْ بِحَمْدِهِ وَكَفَى بِهِ بِذُنُوبِ عِبَادِهِ خَبِيرًا This verse had mainly three parts. وَتَوَكَّلْ عَلَى الْحَيِّ الَّذِي لَا يَمُوتُ means rely on him ever living who dies not. وَسَبِّحْ بِحَمْدِهِ the second part and him his praise, celebrate with his praise. And the last part وَكَفَى بِهِ بِذُنُوبِ عِبَادِهِ خَبِيرًا And sufficient is he as being aware of the faults of the servants. Not the servants, better say his servants, as we said in the previous episode. Because even the sinners are considered as his servants. So there is no way that a servant should be disappointed when he commits a sin. Anyway, one of the most important concepts to be discussed regarding this verse is the concept of trust. In this verse, when the Holy Prophet ﷺ is ordered to forget all creatures and rely on the pure nature of Allah, he mentions some attributes for his pure nature, which are in fact the main qualifications of the one who can be the real and sure trust of the people. So, based on these rules, we can answer the question, whom must we trust? By paying attention to the attributes and qualifications of Almighty Allah mentioned in this verse, we can reach to the answer. The first attribute and qualification is that he must be alive, because a dead and unbeneficial creature, such as idols, cannot be someone's trust. The second qualification is that the one who we rely on must be immortal. The verse says, عَلَى الْحَيِّ الَّذِي لَا يَمُوتُ Why does he need to be immortal? So that those who trust him do not get worried and irresolute about his death. After all, this is what a hopeful man is staying hopeful for. The third qualification is that he must be omniscient. He must know both all the needs of those who trust in him and the plots and the plans of the foes and the enemies. وَكَفَى بِهِ بِذُنُوبِ عِبَادِهِ خَبِيرًا He is aware of all the sins of his servants. And the fourth one is that he must be omnipotent because he must have no weakness, he must have no disability that weakens this reliance. I mean, the reliance of the servant on the Almighty Allah must be accompanied with a kind of answer, which is the power of the Almighty Allah in controlling, in doing everything. And the fifth qualification is that the one who we can trust must manage and control all the affairs. We know that these attributes, all of them, are only found in the pure nature of Allah. And thus, He is the only one whom can be trusted and does not have instability in all events and disasters. So, these are the characteristics, qualifications, and the attributes of the one if we want to trust.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
Now, because the concept of trust is so important, it is reflected on our traditions more than some other concepts. For example, about trust, the Holy Prophet ﷺ has said, "The one who wants to be the most pious person of people has to trust Allah." As we said earlier, trust on someone who is rightly deserving to be trusted is the tool to reach piety. And this is what the Holy Prophet is saying. Also, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam has said, "Fearing only Allah and not fearing other than Allah is reliance." This is the true meaning of trust. The best servants with Allah are those who trust Allah more and obey His commandments. This is what the Holy Prophet ﷺ is suggesting. Because what is the benefit of trusting someone without accepting his rules, orders, and commandments? It means if you want to check whether you are truly trusting on Allah or not, check and see for yourself whether you are obeying His commandments or you are disobeying Him. Let us have a look at one narration from Imam Ali alayhi salam as the last tradition in this episode. Imam Ali alayhi salam has said, "This is sufficient for your trust that you know no one as your sustainer is but Allah, the Glorious." Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets this life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always, but for me, worry ends when faith begins.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Brother Habib and Sayyid Mohsen. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum as-salam wa rahmatullah.
And Brother Habib Zata, assalamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam wa rahmatullah.
So for today's discussion, we want to talk about an interesting topic. Pets, is it ethical to keep them according to the religion of Islam? Sayyid Mohsen, let's start with you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. When we talk about the pets, yes, there are some animals who are allowed, or, you know, Islam talks about them to keep them as a pet, for example. Cow, goat. You know, sometimes they have said in some of the narrations, obviously, when we look at the Islamic perspective, either we look at the Quran or the narrations, we see that there are certain pets which were, you know, animals which were at the home as a pet. And but the main thing is, you know, when you want to have an animal, mm-hmm. you must look after the rights of the animals as well. For okay. example, in the chapter An'am, verse number 38, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَمَا مِنْ دَابَّةٍ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَلَا طَائِرٍ يُطِيرُ بِجَنَاحَيْهِ إِلَّا أُمَمٌ أَمْثَالَكُمْ. You know, we have the animals and the birds that fly, you know, with the wings. They are not except something like you. They are the communities like you.
Okay.
You know, مَا فَرَّطْنَا فِي الْكِتَابِ مِنْ شَيْءٍ. And we have not neglected anything in the book. ثُمَّ إِلَىٰ رَبِّهِمْ يُحْشَرُونَ. And after that, they all will be gathered towards their Lord. So this verse also tells us that there are the rights of the animals, as we need to look after the rights of the, you know, being a human being of each other. We need to okay. look after their rights as well. And
Islam respects the rights
yes.
of the animals, okay?
Islam respects the rights of every single, you know,
creature.
Thing that exists.
Okay, yes.
You know, plants, even, you know, it is said in some of the narrations that cutting off a tree is just like killing
mm-hmm.
a person.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have these kinds of narrations mm-hmm. as well. So Islam pays attention to every single, thing that exists, because these all are the creatures of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allah has created all of them.
Yes.
And they all have, their own status. And they are for each other. But on top of that, because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made human beings as ashraful makhluqat, the superior of all of the others, so these all are made for the mankind so that they can reach to perfection.
Okay. But not living with them, Habib, isn't it?
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim, bismillahir rahmanir rahim. First of all, just to add off, and then we'll come to your answer. We have, for example, prohibited animals to keep as pets. Mm-hmm. One of them is dogs.
Yes.
There's a saying that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi told Gabriel the angel, "Why aren't you coming inside the house?" He says, "I think that there's a dog in the house."
Oh.
So he goes to the inside the room of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He sees that there's a puppy in the house, so he takes the puppy out.
Okay.
And
also pigs, for example.
Pigs, because they're dirty, yes, and whatnot. But there's no prohibition, keeping one. But you cannot own one.
Yes.
There's a difference between the two, right? And there are different narrations that state, for example, that the Imam alayhi salam had chicken.
Mm-hmm.
They had kinds of pigeons, al-rawa'ib. And they cursed the killers of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And for example, that keep a hen in your house because it wakes you up for Fajr prayers, for example.
Yes.
Keep your chicken in the house because it keeps away devils and demons from your children, for example. And the Imam alayhi salam had pigeons. I'm 100% about that.
Okay.
There's a saying that Imam Baqir alayhi salam had them.
Yes.
And he gifted them to some of his companions and whatnot.
Yes.
Cows and cattle and stuff like that. Normal for Arabs at the time to have, as pets and, to use and take. We even have this saying that a man, a companion of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, had a lamb. He raised it until it became big.
Yes.
And then he sacrificed it and ate its meat.
Mm-hmm.
He went to the Imam. He said that before I sacrificed it, it looked me in the eyes and I looked it in the eyes.
Oh.
And I felt some kind of mercy, but yet I still continued to do my work. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam told him, I wish that you wouldn't have slaughtered it.
Oh.
And of course, horses, donkeys, and stuff like that were also available.
The goats and the sheep.
Yeah. And of course, we see a lot of emphasis on how to act with horses and camels. Because these were the mainstream pets. They were usually used the most.
Yes.
And the Imam alayhi salam, the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, do not hit your animal. Treat it well. Give it water.
Yes.
Put heavy things on
or
it.
Or cutting out the tails. Yes.
Exactly.
They did not do that.
And for example, he saw a camel that had a lot of stuff on it, and its owner was not available. It was tied.
Yes.
The Prophet said, "Where is this person? This person is going to have problems with me on the day of judgment."
Wow.
So that's something to keep in mind how they used to deal with the animals. Now, something that I want to keep the dear listeners up about is that, for example, keeping pets like snakes and spiders.
Oh.
Because I've seen some people. Yes. I've seen python snakes, for example. Okay. I've touched one. I've seen my friends had some, right? I even have some friends who had cobras as pets, right? But at the end of the day, these are dangerous animals to be around.
Mm-hmm.
So the prohibition could be from the dangers that they might bring.
Okay.
So that's something to keep in mind.
So what about living with the animal? Does it have any effect on your lifestyle as a Muslim?
As a Muslim, there's this recommendation. There's this, prohibition of praying in the marabat al-khayl or marabat al-ibn, praying where the camels drink water and where the horses drink water, for example.
Yes.
There's also this, I've seen it before, I'm not sure where, this recommendation of sleeping where the sheep sleep, so sleeping next to the sheep, that's something.
Okay.
Other than that, it's a lifestyle at the end of the day. It doesn't affect you as a Muslim, and as a religion, as your life. Because I've been to, a slaughterhouse, I've been with sheep, I've touched sheep. I have videos with sheep as well and pictures as well if you want to see them, brother, after the show. But the thing is that,
you do not live with them, brother. Because nowadays, when we're talking about the pets, it's a member of the family.
There's
nowadays,
this bond relationship that becomes with it.
Yeah.
I have this story about my grandfather with a dog that he brought. And he had this good connection with it and everything. He bought it from Beirut and he went to, they live in the south, way in the south.
Okay.
My grandparents' village is considered as part of, occupied Palestine right now.
Okay.
So it's like in Google Maps at least.
Okay.
So my grandmother hit him with a rock. He ran away.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of months later, my grandfather goes down to the same street he buys the dog from, and then he sees the dog over there with the owner.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how close and how loyal he was to his first owner.
Okay.
So there's that loyalty, there's that love that happens between, especially with dogs. Cats are, I hate cats.
Okay. But I still believe that the modern lifestyle, Sayyid, considers pets as a member of the family. And this is the problem that I think the religion of Islam has with it, isn't it? Because of the influences of the behaviors of the dogs or cats or any animal on you. And unfortunately, replacing the pets with the child, you know, nowadays we could see so many families getting married, even getting married in the modern world, you know, do not have children, but consider the pet as a child.
So these are the realities, you know. Okay. We see these kind of discussions on the, you know, on the social
how
media.
How belittle is human being.
But the point is that, you know, the main point is that, you know, when you give love to the animals, they will also love you. Mm-hmm. Similarly, we need to love our kids. We need to love our family. Okay. So the main point is obviously when we do not know why we were, for example, you know, were created.
Yes.
We do not know about our existence, mm-hmm. the goal of existence.
Yes.
Then obviously whatever is in this material world will go after it. And the reason why the people are, you know, changing like or exchanging their children, like not having children but having pets, you know, in a time of their life, they do realize mm-hmm. that what a big mistake they have done. And the pets, obviously, they can have this love with any kind of pet, you know. Mm-hmm. If they have a pigeon, they have a dog, they have a cat, I don't know, ducks, you know, they can love them.
Usually in the modern world, it's very much impossible to have, especially with the modern lifestyle and the systems, you know, the houses, the type of the houses, these apartments that the people have, you know, for example, to keep an animal in the yard or something like that. Unless you got a big house with a big yard or a garden or something.
These are our own issues, our problems, the human beings.
Yes.
You know, because we have moved to a lifestyle where we do not have enough room. Even, mm-hmm. you know, in Islam, when we look at the Islamic perspective about the house, it says you should have enough rooms. Mm-hmm. There should be a separate room for the kids. There should be a place in the house or a room in a house for kids to play.
Mm-hmm.
A yard where you can, you know, go out and have, you know, the sun and the fresh air. So the Islamic lifestyle is different from the Western lifestyle, what we see. So if we have the true Islamic lifestyle, if we follow the Islamic lifestyle, then obviously we need to look after all these things, the issues that are being said in the Islam. And as regards to the pets, yes, it is unfortunately is happening. But obviously, the pets can never be your kids. You know, the pets. Yes. For example, a husband and wife who do not have a kid. Tomorrow when they die, who's going to inherit those pets? What are they going to do with the land or the house? Or they need another person to take care of them.
Okay.
They're not just like humans. So this is a wrong concept. This is a wrong concept which has been, you know, injected into the minds of the people. And that's why we see that, fortunately, the Hollywood or, you know, the Disneyland or the cartoons have criticized this thing, you know.
Animations
like Boss Baby and all those, how the puppy is going to be. So fortunately, we see that even in this point, those who have the material thoughts, mm-hmm. who are non-Muslims and they do not pay any attention to Islam, they are also with us because they also realize this, you know, this mass which going to be, you know, happen. So basically what is happening is it is against the fitrah, it is against the nature of the human beings to replace the kids or human being with something which is, you know, in your control or you're just feeding it. On the other hand, Islam allows it. Why? Because there are many benefits.
I think, you know, respecting the rights of the animals in your idea is very much different from keeping them as the pets inside your house. These are two separate things, isn't it?
These are two separate things.
Separate things, that's right.
Yes.
Okay.
Because
respect the rights of the animals, but it's not necessarily
you need to give them to keep them as food pets. On time. Obviously, this is a kind of sadaqah for you.
If you have.
For example, in the narrations, brother has also mentioned, in the narrations we have from the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, that whoever has a cock which is white color and with the big, mm-hmm. you know, wings.
Feathers, yes.
It is beneficial for your, you know, seven neighbors as well.
Mm-hmm.
It, wipes away the bala. So these are in the narrations. As far as it is concerned to the dogs, it is said if it is something like if you have the dog for guarding your house.
Security.
That is fine. Okay. But do not bring it inside the house.
Yes.
So Islam gives importance to the animals, to their rights. But on top of that, being a Muslim, we should know the rulings about the keeping the animals first.
Mm-hmm. Also paying for them, for them, and you know,
and
you have to pay for
after that, have a pet in your house. Mm-hmm. This is very important because you know we just bring a pet in the house, for example, a puppy or a cat. I don't know,
a bird
or anything, but we never have you know learned about the rights of that animal. Okay. So this is important that even if you want to have a puppy in your house, know about the rulings. There is a najasa, there is impurification.
Usually the pets are kept as a hobby, isn't it? And is this hobby making with the animals allowed in Islam? I mean, you being busy with an animal inside the house, normally you have to manage.
Hobby, I know. Me personally, if I had a bigger house, inshallah ta'ala, Allah yirzuqna, may Allah bless us all of us, inshallah ta'ala. Okay. You know, not an apartment house, at least, right?
But a big yard.
A big yard.
Yes.
I would personally bring in pigeons and chicken. And the reason
this
why...
This is good.
Because not because of the hobby, because of the recommendation available that keeps away the devils.
Okay.
Right? That's one thing.
Okay.
Another thing that some people bring it, not for their own sake, for their kids' sake.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, my Sayyid Mohsen.
Welcome.
Brother Habib, for your presence in the program. Viewpoints, that's all we have time for today's discussion. Okay. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program, Viewpoints on IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/Call of Islam page, also YouTube, Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you. Fi amanallah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you to doubt you would be the worst mistake? Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Whenever people talk about the war in Ukraine, they tend to focus on what's happening inside Ukraine. You know, the battles taking place in Mariupol, the Donbass, or the outskirts of Kiev. But that's just half the story. The war in Ukraine is really a catalyst. It's pushing the world towards a multipolar order. Now, right this moment, we are seeing a global realignment. And I don't just mean the shifting of alliances. We're talking about the future of energy sales, global supply chains, the redistribution of power from the concentrated hands of a few in the West towards Asia. This is a seismic shift, both in size and nature, that could very well determine the future of international politics for the next decade. Now, if I told you 2 months ago that EU member states would be paying for their gas in rubles, you would never have believed me. And yet here we are, where the dominance of the US dollar, of the euro, are being challenged. And while the Western press want you to believe that the whole world is united and has the exact same position on Russia, it couldn't be further from the truth. So maybe it really is time to take a hard look at what the so-called international community really means and where it's headed. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. The United States of America has been the global superpower during the 21st century up until this point, and for the better part of the last century. And one of the things that the U.S. derives much of its power from is its currency, the U.S. dollar. So toward the end of World War II in 1944, you had the Bretton Woods system that was put in place, pegging the U.S. dollar to the gold standard. And as a result, the U.S. dollar de facto became the global reserve currency. And that lasted for a few decades, right? And then from 1968 to 1973, that system fell apart. And what emerged soon thereafter in its place was the petrodollar. The United States, in secret, made an agreement with Saudi Arabia, right? They told the Saudis, we'll give you weapons, we'll give you security. And in exchange, the Saudis would conduct all oil sales in U.S. dollars and buy up U.S. bonds. 80% of all oil transactions are conducted in U.S. dollars. Around 55% of global reserves are in U.S. dollars. But now, because of the war in Ukraine, that could very well change. We've had several shocking developments in the last week that you would have never imagined before, right? So because of the war in Ukraine, the U.S., the EU, they have slapped Russia with sanctions to the point that Russia is now the most sanctioned country on earth with well over 5,530 sanctions. The EU sanctioned everything except Russian energy imports because the EU relies on Russia, right? About 40% of their gas comes from Russia. However, the UK, the US, they went ahead and straight up banned Russian energy imports. And even though the US isn't a major importer of Russian oil, that announcement of, oh, we're thinking about banning Russian oil, and then actually banning Russian oil, this caused gas prices and oil prices to skyrocket. Oil went up to around $135 a barrel. That's the highest we've seen since July 2008. Gas prices also went up dramatically, Dutch and British. And now all of a sudden, the U.S. is panicking because the U.S. is a net importer of oil. So their oil bill is going way up. And so in order to drive the price back down, the Americans are trying several things, right? First of all, they called up the Saudis and the Emiratis and asked them, please produce more oil. We need to calm global prices. But turns out Mohammed bin Salman, the Saudi crown prince, he won't even take Joe Biden's phone call. You know, apparently they're unhappy because the United States isn't giving them enough support to kill more Yemenis. Then the United States sent a delegation to Venezuela. Remember, Venezuela sits on the world's largest reserves of oil. And the U.S. used to be one of their top customers, you know, until Bush, Obama, Trump sanctioned them into oblivion. Now, what's funny here is that for years we've been hearing from the U.S. and their allies that Nicolas Maduro is not the president of Venezuela. Apparently, the president is some guy that no one's ever heard of in Venezuela called Juan Guaido. But now, all of a sudden, when the Americans need oil, oh, now they recognize who's the real president, and they're sending a delegation to beg for oil. And again, who are they talking to? Who's the decision maker? Well, I can tell you it's not Juan Guaido, because they went to speak to none other than Maduro. Now, if the Americans are begging Venezuela for oil and begging Maduro for oil, you know the situation is dire. And on top of that, the Americans have tried other ways to bring down oil prices, right? So all of a sudden, after dragging their feet for well over a year, all of a sudden, the U.S. wants to rejoin the Iran nuclear deal. Wow. So remember, the idea is that they lift sanctions on Iran. Iran can put its oil back on the global market, and then oil prices go down because the supply is increased. Well, that didn't happen because of multiple reasons. Russia demanded a written guarantee that Iran won't be hit with fresh sanctions for maintaining ties with Russia. However, it's also been reported there are additional details that had to be ironed out, the terrorism designations and so on. The point is, this sudden enthusiasm and this rush from the Americans to finish up the deal, it really shows their desperation. And the United States have basically sanctioned so many people, they've sanctioned everyone, that they've backed themselves into a corner. And who has the upper hand now? Russia, Iran, Venezuela. Let me tell you, that is quite the twist, right? You're really seeing the tables turn right before you. And to make matters worse for Washington, Saudi Arabia not only refused to take their calls, but was even contemplating selling oil to China, not in U.S. dollars, but in yuan, in China's currency, the renminbi. So basically saying, bye-bye, petrodollar. Remember, the entire premise behind the greenback's value is that major oil sales, energy sales, are denominated in U.S. dollars. Now, China imported roughly 17% of its oil from Saudi Arabia in 2021, so this is no joke. At the same time, instead of sanctioning Russia like everybody else, New Delhi struck a deal with Moscow for 3 million barrels of crude. Now, the amount is irrelevant because India consumes more than that in a single day. But the fact that India traded with Russia, continued to maintain ties with Russia, bought this oil at a discount and in rupees, rubles. So dealing another blow to the US dollar. So China refuses to sanction Russia. India and Pakistan refuse to sanction Russia. They're continuing to buy gas and oil like normal, right? Despite the threats to India that it will also face sanctions. That doesn't sound very isolating, right? That's roughly 40% of the world's population there, refusing to toe the Western narrative, refusing to toe the Western line, I should say. And never mind all the other countries that have also refused to condemn Russia. Just look at this map of who has sanctioned Russia. It's basically EU member states, North America, and Japan, and Australia. So in other words, it's the global north, right? This is where all the world's wealth is hoarded. And, you know, all the countries that have not sanctioned Russia are mostly countries you would consider the global south, right? So there's an interesting pattern right there. Western governments and media, they keep saying the international community is united against Russia. I'm sorry, that's not what it looks like. The West is not the international community. It's the West, or the global north, if you want to use the new terms, right? So as a matter of fact, it goes further than that. Let's look at these two UN votes. On March 2nd, the UN General Assembly adopted a resolution condemning Russia. The overwhelming majority of countries did vote to condemn Russia. That's undeniable. But if you look at who abstained, we have Iran, Iraq, China, India, Pakistan, South Africa. Again, that is enormous. That's well over a third of the world's population, you know, above 40%. We're nearing half the world's population. And so later on March 24th, another General Assembly resolution and pretty much the same result. And 2 days before that, on March 22nd, you had a meeting in Moscow between the Russian foreign minister and who? The ambassadors of all the emerging economic powers, the BRICS, right? So you've got the ambassadors of Brazil, India, China, South Africa, meeting in Moscow with Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister. Again, that doesn't really look very isolating to me, does it? So you've got the two most populous countries on Earth, two nuclear powers, meeting in Russia's capital with Lavrov. I bet you didn't hear about that on the BBC. Now, Lavrov actually made his first visit to China since the war began. Just a week later, on March 30th, Lavrov actually visited India on April 1st. And now, India has received many visits, many official visits in the past week. You've had officials from the UK, from Greece, Austria, Mexico. They've all come to India. But the only one that India's Prime Minister Modi met with was Lavrov. And again, that pretty much tells you everything you need to know. But this war in Ukraine hasn't been without its setbacks, right? When we talk about a global realignment, that goes both ways. And so we've seen the European Union openly arming Ukraine. That's unprecedented. Germany, the same thing, right? Germany has broken with its past, with its stated stance of neutrality. And Germany's going even further. It's rearming. And I think this is something that not a lot of people really grasp. They don't understand how serious this is, that Germany is rearming. That never ends up well. The last time Germany rearmed, we had a Second World War, we had the Holocaust, we had 30 million dead in Europe alone. And now Germany is basically doing what Donald Trump wanted it to do, what NATO wanted it to do, which is increase their defense spending from 1.5 to 2% of their GDP. So Germany's announced 100 billion euros for its military. That's more than Russia. This is incredible, and it could have very, very severe repercussions down the road. Now, as soon as the war started, Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan went to Moscow. He not only met with Putin, he also bought 2 million tons of gas and wheat. He refused to condemn Russia at the UN. He refused to sanction Putin. And the Americans took offense to that, right? Because they want countries they can control. And so soon thereafter, Imran Khan unveiled a plot by the United States to oust him, to unseat him from power. Lo and behold, here we are. And Imran Khan has just been ousted via a vote of no confidence. And like all Pakistani prime ministers before him, he didn't get to complete his five-year term. The Americans are like the mafia. They don't forget, and they punished Imran Khan for daring to conduct an independent foreign policy. And that's the grim reality, right? That shifting towards a multipolar world doesn't come without a price, and the American empire will kick and scream and take down as many with it as it can. To punish Russia, we've seen many corporations pulling out, from McDonald's to Instagram, you name it. And among those are credit card giants Visa and MasterCard, which is actually not that smart when you think about it, because what they've basically done is they handed their market share in Russia to China, right? Because as soon as they left, China's UnionPay came into Russia and linked up with Russia's payment system, MIR, M-I-R. And to make things even more interesting, while all this was happening, Iran and Venezuela started talks to link their payment systems to Russia's MIR. So, you know, further enlarging the cooperation, the international cooperation between these countries, further enhancing the economic ties between the axis of resistance, between the global south. So the West attempts to crush Russia's financial system, you know, by freezing roughly half of the Russian central bank's foreign assets. They haven't entirely succeeded, because as a matter of fact, if you look right now at the value of the Russian ruble, it's regained a lot of its value. It's almost back to pre-war levels at 80 rubles to the dollar. And of course, there are people who say, well, this is just artificial, it's just temporary. Yeah, but it's still astounding. You know, Russian President Vladimir Putin told the Russian Central Bank and he told Gazprom, the state-owned gas company, to come up with a plan by March 31st to make sure that all gas payments from unfriendly countries be conducted in rubles, not euros or dollars. And again, this is a monumental shift, because as we were saying, most oil and energy transactions are denominated in US dollars. Actually, most of Russia's gas sales to Europe are in euros. And so when Putin says unfriendly countries, he's talking mostly about the EU, the US, Japan, Norway, the countries that sanctioned Russia. And that alone helped shore up the value of the ruble, as European countries, which again, collectively, they get 40% of their gas from Russia. So, you know, they have no choice. They have to go now to Gazprom Bank and open an account in rubles, where their euros will be taken. They'll be sold for rubles in their name at the Moscow Stock Exchange, and then pay for the gas, then also used to pay for the gas in their name. So not only does that drive up the demand for rubles, but it's also smart because it means European buyers are now opening accounts at a Russian bank and not the other way around. So this further insulates both the money itself by keeping it in Russia and Gazprom Bank from potential sanctions in the future. And Joe Biden, the US president, he made clear that there will be food shortages as a result of the conflict. Benchmark gas prices have gone through the roof. People in the US are paying $4 a gallon now. And yes, there was already an energy and fuel crisis before the war. The Americans and the Europeans have essentially taken a bad situation and made it three times worse. Don't go anywhere. We'll continue breaking down the shift to a multipolar world right after this short break.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities. This program is broadcast every Sunday by IRIB English Radio.
So as we were looking at the other week in Yemen, when the price of fuel goes up, everything goes up, because fuel is one of the most important commodities and affects everything from healthcare to public transport to groceries. Now, earlier I spoke to Scott Ritter about his take on things. Scott is a former intelligence officer in the US Marine Corps. He also served as a United Nations weapons inspector and offers formidable insight, not just in combat-related matters, but international affairs and what it means exactly, you know, transitioning to a multipolar world.
The war in Ukraine is a cleansing moment, and that I don't mean that in a good way. You know, it's like let's say you have a forest that's full of trees that are infected with fungus and insects and all that, and then you have a forest fire come through and burn it all down. That's not necessarily a good thing, except that what emerges in the aftermath of that fire is a viable forest with healthy trees. that'll grow better and produce and have a better impact on the environment. What existed prior was just a festering cesspool of, you know, of infection. The world today is a festering cesspool of infection because of the United States, because of our efforts to impose unilateral hegemony over the world. Ukraine, you know, you can't make the transition from that to what Russia and China are seeking to do without a forest fire. And Ukraine is that forest fire. And it's sad for the Ukrainian people. It's sad